When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
If you're going to San Francisco,
from Woody and Howes, and we are here in San Francisco to one of the earlier creators and one of the founders who have had lived experience of being in Howes.
And we have a few people here that we're getting their insight and perspectives with. I'm going to let the person, because my name is Theo, I didn't introduce myself, so what's your name, and tell us a little bit.
Janice,
tell us a little bit about your story.
I am a recovering addict. I've been through a lot. I'm 38, and I've definitely seen a lot of different things that's happening, you know, through addiction, without being an addiction, that I could say I've seen more progress in the past with the environment versus now with the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the, you know, it comes with the mayor, comes with the officers around here, things of that nature. I've seen anthrax, I've seen towers come down, I've seen a lot of different experiences, but this is probably the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Our city is not as effective as I would like it to be. I've been clean from crack cocaine for 6 years. And what I see now is that the poverty is terrible. I have my different opinions about London Breed, which is I've seen it get more worser now that she's in the office than before. This is my opinion, so. Mm-hmm. Don't judge it. But it's too lenient. The officers here with the, you know, with the things going on with all the shooting, mm-hmm. all the, you know, drug infestation, you know, there's not enough being done. You know, I'm on Citizens app and somebody got maced over here right across the street from the police station. You know, that's how bad it is to where, you know, the job's not getting done,
Let me ask you a question, because I'm hearing, are you talking about you're looking for them to crack down on poor
everything.
People?
Everything. I mean, everything from us wearing our masks, you know, the city won't get better until they actually do their part, you know, as a job.
Okay, so.
These people getting jobs here from the second chance jobs, the porta potties. A lot of people with green suits on to make sure that the streets are nice and clear. and keep the sidewalks clean from even walking down the street and seeing all the poverty.
Okay, so I'm just clear because
I'm coming in, so I'm not sure if I'm talking about the right topic.
Right, because we're kind of let's back up a little bit because what we in house do and what we stand for is we're trying to be able to create a new situation than relying on police because they bring violence. And for example, there has been some of my guests here that have issues with substances and mental health issues, and some of them have met a violent end for just existing. So we don't stand for them coming in and cleaning up. We believe as if we are community members, we believe in our creating new solutions. For example, it shouldn't take, like, for example, the mother who had her son was beaten because he had a psychotic episode, killed to be when she's calling him to get him some help. That's not the solution.
Right.
So what we're trying to do and what this podcast does is like, so what can we creatively do, like trauma-informed care? What can we do to create situations and solutions to make sure that it's not a crime to have a mental health issue? It's not a crime to be addicted to substances, because most people have trauma and they utilize the best things that they can to cope with that trauma. So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, me being a recovering addict and coming from Walden Houses and, Leave With Worth Centers and all this, now it's gender response, trauma informed with Health Rock 360, things of that nature. I really feel like, it starts within the organizations, not to make it, because, I do have a heart for people that does have mental, emotional, physical issues, to where they can't, they can't pick themselves back up on their own, but some of these programs and stuff and now these days are too lenient to the people, because I have, for example, I know someone that's staying at 214.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there 2 years now.
Okay.
You can use in the house now, you can do all these things, but it's harm reduction.
Well, I was going to say, because people don't, and one of this disinformation that's out here is that people think that people can magically come off of it. This is a health issue. And what we need is harm reduction sites, because it takes time. Because if you do, for some people that have been using it to medication, and from a psychological or medical standpoint, that body has replenished and utilized that drug as the coping mechanism. And so, if you tell them to just drop off and take, do it cold turkey, they will die. Literally.
Some people's bodies are used to
the drug,
the damage control that has been done, and I understand that, I started using crack cocaine when I was 17.
What made you start to use it at 17?
I had PTSD. My mom, I've seen a lot of abuse in my life. I think for me, because I went to Catholic school for 14 years and my family tried so hard to get me not to see, all the trauma in the world, things of that nature, it kind of detoured me, like my backpack, like Dora the Explorer. I want to see what's going on out here, because I've been so in the shell for so long. All my friends probably got pregnant already with smoking weed and all this stuff, and I never really had that experience. So I was like, I was trying to see what the world had, what it was about, and I kind of went far from one step to the next step, and finally, but for me, I understand, as far as, giving people the chance to, to find themselves, to get the help that they need. For me, it took me a lot of different situations and programs to say, hey, you know what, it's not really up to these people that's constantly beating me up with this information. I found my way within the choices, and we all have choices too in life, some of the trauma that has been done to certain people, though, they can't even find that choice, like I say, I kind of understand where you guys are going, with it, and I thank God for the where he has brought me to understand, because a lot of people can't understand. The trauma has been done from years and years in the past, you know, from growing up, that they probably will never find it, you know?
Well, and one of the things, and the reason that this is so fresh in my mind is, like, you and Carlos and I was in Oakland, and there was an elderly woman. She had to be in her mid-70s. Mm. She was brutally beaten and raped a few weeks ago, and she, to cope with that, she's using. And, so it's like, it's very difficult for, you know, someone that's outside not understanding. We don't know everyone's story. We don't know the trauma that they're going through. And if we utilize the same destructive, abusive practices that we've had in so long, we've ingested, like police or criminalization, we're never going to get, you're not going to jail a person to sobriety. Right. You're not going to jail someone to mental sanity.
Well, you know, yeah. I'm going to be honest about what I'm going through right now. That's still, I don't use crack cocaine anymore, but I'm a DV survivor. Mm-hmm. I almost died from my ex-boyfriend 2 years ago. In my bathtub from, you know, getting choked out, you know what I'm saying? And so, although I don't use crack anymore, my alcoholism, you know what I'm saying? So I understand trying to cope and deal with certain issues without, you know what I'm saying, with getting the help or finding yourself getting the help that you need. People's stories, like, you know, Cooper's, you know what I'm saying, you know, my insight to try to, you know, pull all these stories, all these, you know, things in, so I can know, hey, I'm just like everybody else, you know. I fought for a different life, but it's one drug for the other, you know, at the end of the day. So I try to make sure that, you know, I'm no better than anybody else. Keep the understanding of what, you know, poverty is and what it could do, you know, the pain,
yes,
the suffering.
Yes. And trauma, because like I said, you know, it's very, very traumatic to be out here. And particularly, and what you, Cooper, you pointed out, it's very, and I'm interviewing him, and I know it's very traumatic for women and men too, but mostly women, because they're very vulnerable. Here's a late 70-year-old woman who has gotten brutally, you know, so she had to be moved into another community where it's safe. Right. But what, imagine you being displaced and no one's really there for you, and the only solution that they have is to find you, to put you in jail or to criminalize you. It's just not, you know, you're going to find some way to cope with that kind of darkness. So.
Yeah, so, and I'm definitely trying to see the light within, you know, just saying, hey, Janice, you can get up out of this. I'm not in a relationship, so I'm scared of dealing with, you know, the male factor, you know, it's definitely, so I understand poverty can go in different ways, emotional stress, you know, and how we cope. I thank God that I've chosen to do it a different way, because I don't know what it would take me to if I was to go what I'm used to, what I'm comfortable with, you know. I definitely just feel like the environment, county, the police, if they'd be more in, you know, vulnerable to people like me from my past to now, Cooper's situation, I think, you know, we wouldn't have all these killings and all these, you know, misunderstandings of someone, you know, that got a cart and, you know what I'm saying, and he's just trying to survive versus, you know what I'm saying, versus judging that person. So there's a lot of judgment within, you know, here. That's one thing that I'm definitely sensitive to. I've learned how to share my story a little bit more day by day, you know, so I can get, you know, not to be judged, not to be criminalized, not to be put in the institution because I said one thing that triggered somebody, you know what I'm saying? Just understand it and listen to what I have to say.
Right.
And then you might get an understanding of what, you know what I'm saying? It's the bigger picture, you know, not in the moment, you know what I'm saying? The inside of that struggle, personal struggle.
You know, when I became in the house, I come from a different background myself. I come from a very well-educated, and I was a teacher, a school teacher.
Yeah.
And I got ill. And so I fell into the idea of deserving and undeserving house.
Right.
And of course, then that easily disabused when you got there. They don't care if you got a bachelor's, a master's degree. They don't really, really care. Right. You know, they're going to come to arrest you, or they're going to come tell you to move. You're going to move.
Right.
So that opened my eyes a lot about my unhoused. But I also think, too, doing this podcast, going different areas and listening to other people's stories, people that have substance usage challenges, people that have mental health challenges, that are functioning and understanding that there is no such thing as a deserving or undeserving unhoused person.
Yes.
We all need the humanity. We all need care, and we all need kindness. My mother used to say this all the time. It used to drive me crazy, but it don't cost you nothing to be kind.
Right.
And that is what I want to pass on, because we don't know everybody's story. And sometimes they're dealing with so many insurmountable challenges that's just by the outside we can make a snap judgment, but we really don't know what they're battling from day to day. So I want to ask this lady, hello, how are you? I would like to introduce myself. My name is Theo. I have a podcast called Weedy and House. What's your name, ma'am?
Hi, Theo. I'm Roadkill.
Roadkill. These cool, these unique names.
Yeah, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with saying Roadkill, so you can call me RK.
RK, because I don't want to be disrespectful.
No, that's why this is more of a formality for anybody.
Okay.
I'm okay with being Roadkill.
Okay. So, tell us a little bit about your story.
That is a huge. I mean, it's like one of those things. Where do I start? I mean. Okay. So I guess to start, I mean, first off, I mean, do you want to paraphrase anything that you?
Well, let me make it easier for you. So you're here in the Coalition for the Homeless. How long have you been here?
So I have been with the Coalition since 2018. And beforehand, I used to visit the Coalition and the Mission when my mother used to receive street sheets.
Oh, cool. So you got interested that way. What can you tell us about what's the first impressions that you had when you heard about street sheets?
So I grew up a lot around my mom's community, which were the homeless, population. So I mean,
so your mother was a homeless worker?
My mom was a homeless sex worker. And been like that since I was since she was nine.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, I find that having the street sheet is like amazing. And you know, we were one of the first, you know, cities in America to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish that people would take this program and make a pilot program for themselves, because I find that like this supplemental income is like really rewarding, and it just provides dignity to the people that we serve. So.
If you made me stepping back a bit, your mother was a sex worker, but were you raised in the streets, or was you your mother protected? Most parents try to do the best they can. So
just to give you a little background story, because I don't want to take too much of.
We have plenty of time.
It is also it's my mom's story, so I don't want to say too much of hers. But
okay,
I was born in a hotel,
mm-hmm.
in the Mission.
Okay.
It says that on my birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't get any more San Francisco than that. you know, so just being in the streets was kind of like embedded into my blood even
mm-hmm.
before I was born.
Okay.
So, you know, my mom, kind of going back a little bit with like what you were talking about, you know, I do completely agree with you that trauma definitely is one of the leading factors of why people use,
mm-hmm.
and that was the case for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Something really traumatic had happened to her.
She was 9 years old, and she was sexually abused. So let's be clear. That's...
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
She was sexually abused, and the only way she could cope with it was turning to the community that was welcoming to her, and, you know, she kind of ran with it from there. My mom, she always felt like an outsider
mm-hmm.
Growing up. Even when she was in close proximity to family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by the time I was 2 years old, I was in full custody of my grandmother because my mom just couldn't settle down. You know, mom's never been one of those people that, you know, she can like root herself in one place. Like she always has to be on the go.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave a little bit of that to me too, about the same way, except in the nature where I have some responsibilities now
mm-hmm.
that I have to take care of that keeps me grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom never could find that for herself. And I remember the first time I was ever introduced to the homeless community.
Mm-hmm.
I was younger than five. And I remember looking at them and just seeing myself in their faces,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it could be any one of us, you know? And I remember at a young age,
mm-hmm.
I looked at them and I just remember being like, why isn't there any help?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even then, there
mm-hmm.
wasn't enough help. you know, I see a lot of people hurting, and, you know, them using substances is honestly the only thing that makes them feel like themselves. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of keeps them, takes them away from the pain they've been inflicted with. Mm-hmm. You know, even just for a moment, you know, like, yeah, the high is like a 5-minute high, but that was who knows how long for them in their mental stability. And also, I guess, first time I ever personally became homeless, I was, I guess I was on the borderline of being, I mean, I was a child homeless with my mother, but mm-hmm. I mean, by myself, mm-hmm. I was about 15 going on 16. Mm-hmm. And
what happened?
So I was dealing with a lot of shit at home. I remember becoming truant, and that kind of escalated things in my family life. And then I came out as being queer, mm-hmm. and then that also did its job. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of family turn their backs against me, you know. I come from a very Catholic...
conservative background.
Mexican, yeah. They're, mm-hmm. they're very conservative, yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the thought of somebody in their family being gay... or what they like to call it. They called me a joto.
A hobo?
Joto.
Joto. I mean, I thought you said a hobo. Wait, well, that, wait a minute.
Joto is Spanish for gay.
Oh, okay, okay.
Or more discriminative.
Oh, more very... it's like an insult, it sounds like. Okay, okay, okay.
It definitely uses a slur.
Okay.
And I definitely did not feel welcome there. I was also combating being abused by my stepfather. So,
oh, sorry.
You know, it's time to get the hell out of here. And I continued to go to school homeless until I got my GED. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go and have a f***ing free-for-all and mm-hmm. do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I started using myself, the substances I used to like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at first it started out with prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I had been in an accident when I was younger, and so I got addicted to that. And then when I was on the street... I started doing a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't anything I wasn't doing except for heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying anything to people that do that.
Yeah,
I had a little bit of a limit for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I also am, like, kind of terrified of needles.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
She's terrified of needles, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you, what you said to me is very moving and powerful. And I, when you were saying it, I was feeling it. But also, my mind is like, of course, because the situation is so new, what I... the elderly woman expressing it. So I can truly connect and understand what you mean. It's very, very difficult out here, and generational trauma is very real too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, and it's, and you're explaining it to me very well, because I understand that broken glass cuts, and unfortunately it affects us all. You know, mm-hmm. as a child, you ingest and you want the best for your mom. If you see that she's not okay, then you're going to resonate. It's going to resonate. And I wanted to know, it's like, what was your guiding force? Again, you said you was a street sheet, but is there anything that you hear that you would like to influence or kind of encourage some people that are going through maybe similar situations? Would you?
I guess the only thing I have to say is, you know, like, don't be afraid to use your voice, because I was afraid to use it for so long, you know, until I came to the coalition.
Why were you afraid?
I was afraid to use my voice before because I was, it was like in fear of like retaliation or someone being like, shut up, bitch. Like, you don't know what the f*** you're talking about. Like,
mm-hmm.
people that just didn't have any personal experience to being homeless and, you know, just see homelessness as like this demon in the night, and it's really not. You know,
it's so multi-layered, and that's one of the things that I advocate, even among our community. I tell people that maybe experience a different brand of homelessness or being unhoused or displaced, that, you know, we don't corner the market on who should get help or not. We have
right.
to understand there's so much that's going on.
You prioritize.
You know, and one of the things, one of the communities that I've been trying to work with is like getting to the sex workers, and there's so much shame and so much branding against that from it. But the second,
this country was made on sex workers.
Thank you. And it's the oldest and it's been the oldest profession. You could look at the Bible and you could see it's the oldest profession in the world. What
yeah.
it's like our puritanical and our judgmental way of doing it.
There's always a want for it. There's
yeah.
always a need for it, and it's going to outlast me on this earth, you know?
It's yeah.
Continue.
Yeah.
For another thousands of years.
Yes. Whenever, long before.
Whenever this thing ends, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, sex work has always been a thing.
Yeah.
And I've never, you know, when I was younger, I couldn't understand why my mom did it until I had to basically sit in her shoes
mm-hmm.
and be like, oh, this is why, you know, mm-hmm. it's again, another form of supplemental income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also, to some degree, it does dignify a person, you know, because they're, you know, they call the hours, they call the shots.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a self-made hustle, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And my mom, you know, she definitely liked having the freedom of, you know, choosing what she wanted to do with her body. And, you know, I find that very liberating, mm-hmm. you know, especially for just women in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the times throughout history, we've been told, like, shut up, f*** off,
mm-hmm.
like, you're a whore, f*** you piece of shit, like, all these different things. And it's like, why, though? Like, why?
You know, or utilize, make it dehumanize you by using your own sexuality or your choices and your who you are. That I see it consistently. Unfortunately, we live in a misogynistic world and a very yeah. masculine, dominant world. And the first thing we hear is that she wants to
misogynistic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely so.
Views. A lot of the times men don't want, and I don't want to genderize this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just saying, a lot of the times when people are very conservative about sex work,
mm-hmm.
it's just because they don't understand what it takes to, like, you know, it's not for the meek of heart.
Exactly.
Somebody
definitely
has to be a strong person, a strong individual, to even put themselves out like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And
my
confident.
My mom has always been a strong person.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, resourceful, because, like, there's been a lot of women that have been using it to feed their families, which we've showed in other places
definitely.
Things like that, or taking and only for someone to try to minimize or reduce them and their whole accent without understanding. That's one of the things.
Sure we were clothed, always made sure we had food, you know. Sometimes people would come and go, but she'd always make them leave. You know, she wouldn't just let them stay. I mean, you know, she did her thing that she had to do for us. Unfortunately, I don't have the best relationship right now with my mom. It's mm-hmm. a little strained. And that's because over the last 5, even 6 years, I've had to grow to a certain point where I feel like I've had to leave her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm at this point in my life where our ideals and our ideology of each other just does not meet with one another. But I don't love her any less because of what she does.
Mm-hmm.
I just always constantly worry about her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when I was homeless and my mom was homeless and I didn't see her, like, I always looked up at the stars and
hope she was safe and
home.
Yeah, I understand. And, like, you know, families are complex and complicated. And, like, this situation here is, like, our society has got to be much more kinder and much more understanding. And one of the things that I really thank you for sharing this, and I hope, like, people that are listening to this meet in the light of understanding and also offers a word of kindness and encouragement to one another in order for us to get through this.
Definitely. I guess to kind of follow back, because I remember one of the things you asked to another interviewee
mm-hmm.
was you were, like, asking, like, what you would do differently or, like, how you would implement things better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's just it's one of those things where we kind of have to get over the elephant in the room and we kind of have to just
Thank
chip
you.
Away.
Thank you.
And, you know, have, like, the broader understanding that this person that's doing this, like, it didn't just happen overnight.
Right.
You know, eventually they were led to this path because, you know, a lot of people, they think that people don't have choices. You know, people do have choices,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I will say that what choice do you have if you grew up in poverty?
Mm-hmm.
There's not many choices. Like,
mm-hmm.
I grew up in poverty, and a lot of the times I had to basically create options for myself because they don't exist, and they don't exist for other people. And
yeah.
so one of the things I would like to do, and if the city officials ever listen to this podcast, I hope they do,
mm-hmm.
you know, I want them to understand that, like, you know, stop pushing away people's, like, pain and stop kind of, like, dismissing it all in one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are what we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am, my identity is not my homelessness, but my homelessness is an experience. And I take that with me every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might have been housed now the last 2 years. I was homeless for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was introduced to homelessness. And it never sat right with me, you know? Like, how are we one of the richest cities in the world
mm-hmm.
and there's so much poverty?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree Thank you very much, Ms. Rokill, for your time. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy and Howes, and I thank you all for listening. Let us hope to again if we meet in the light of understanding and kindness. This is Theo Henderson. This is Weedy and Howes, and this is Unhoused News. Candace Morgan, an unhoused woman, was found brutally murdered and dumped into a trash can. Caitlyn Jenner, house celebrity, NIMBY running for governor. She stated another house NIMBY was packing up his hangar to avoid houselessness. If only houselessness was so easy to solve. She also states her wealthy friends are leaving in droves because they are tired of seeing unhoused people. Kevin DeLeon is doing a sweep on May 17th in El Sereno and trying to put a fence up. He is taking the cues from Mitchell Farrell when they did the Echo Park Lake occupation on March 24th and the 25th. After multiple protests, they finally relented and took the fence down and left the unhoused alone. In other news, a housed Washington man kills an unhoused man for practice before killing his wife. Also, an unhoused man was attacked by a housed archer. Two unhoused men are injured. Housed people are taking bottle rockets and throwing them at unhoused people's tents, setting them on fire. And this is Unhoused News.
This is Theo.
Yes.
And he has an interesting story to tell about them moving them up the hill, moving them down the hill, and how this encampment got here.
Can you tell us a little bit about it, please?
Yeah. When I became homeless here, I was introduced to a gentleman that had a place here that was housing for people. And I got cancer and I got medical problems
that
I should be in. And I should be in a place. You know, that has my own bathroom because my blood disease and stuff like that.
I have a question because I have a disability as well. Is it difficult to try to have your deal with your cancer out here on the street?
I can't have my I have skin cancer all over my arms
my
neck.
Jeez. Yeah.
And I've had 5 operations already, but I haven't had it. Being able to go to the doctors here, mm-hmm. because if you're homeless here, they kick you out of the hospital more pretty much.
Yeah, they tried to do that to me too.
And I mean, I sat homeless and they totally turned their cheek on me. Mm-hmm. And the people here don't have the resources for me. And they do, but I'm not good enough for it.
Oh,
you know, it's a prejudice thing because of the way I get looked, I guess, and my attitude. But I have a negative attitude because of this, because they lied to me about going up the hill. They gave us spots up there. They kicked us out of there. They threw all my belongings away there. And they came down here, and then they kicked us out down here. And it's a cleanup, but they threw all my personal belongings away. And I can't be out in the sun. And I'm burning up right now just sitting out here. And they don't care. Being disabled and being you're homeless, you're a piece of crap. You're a piece of crap, and that's just the way it is. It's easier to eradicate us than it is to deal with us. You know, we're just an eyesore, I guess.
One of the staff members said that they are working on permanent housing, and that's 2 years. Do you think you can hold out with your cancer 2 years?
No. If I don't go to the doctor soon, I'm going to end up dying. I feel it in my body. I can feel it. It's eating me up right now. They don't care.
Is there any, do you have to go to chemotherapy or anything like that to offset your skin cancer?
I got sick with from a pill.
Oh, okay.
That pill called Zantac.
Yeah.
I have a long bit. I took that pill 15 years.
How long have you been out on house out here?
I've been here only 2 years on the streets. And I didn't know, even know this place was here, but my friend died of cancer. I came from Florida. Mm-hmm. And she died of cancer, and I ended up being homeless. And I came here and tried to get help, and they had no resources at all. We've been here 2 years now. I'm going on 2 years, and the only thing we got is bathrooms.
You know the question that I always hear, NIMBYs that write all these conversations, this is the first thing that they say. If they only get the, they would like to be out here, and if only they get a job. But you have skin cancer. Why is it that you can't get a job?
I've been disabled since 1990. I was forced to go back to work because my disability and child support took over my life, my disability checks. I didn't have no money to live, so I ended up going back to work. But going back to work, they cut me off with disability, and then back in 2008 was the last job that I had, and I kept getting hurt, and I didn't know why it was from, and I had to come up and go on my disability again. Well, it took from 2008 to 2016 to get my disability reinstated, and then I came here, and then...
I wanted to ask you, what if there's another NIMBY statement they always love to say, and people always want to focus on, is that they say that you don't want help, but you just stated that you wanted help because you have skin cancer.
They have lied and they told everybody that I didn't want help. They offered us a motel when the COVID came around, mm-hmm. and the restrictions are that I wasn't allowed to have anybody over. No, nobody can stay overnight, and I can't have no visitors, and I have to self-medicate because of the... All this time, I just found out a couple months ago about the Zantac thing, and they won't even give me a painkiller because they don't want to get me addicted, so I have to self-medicate, and I self-medicate by drinking, and I smoke marijuana, and that's too much for them.
This is what angers me when I hear other advocates or people that say that we don't talk about the difficulties of Project Room Kick, or because we want the people to balance. We want to always highlight these Pollyanna side of it. This is the people that are ignored and dismissed. And for the next time when people say that we just only talk about the only the balance on the great part, this is the other part. This gentleman has skin cancer, and he doesn't want to be treated like a...
I have medical problems like you would not believe.
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't be here out in the street like this.
Yeah, absolutely not. Nobody should
and
be.
When they do the cancer, they cut it out of me, and I can't have open sores.
Yeah, yeah. And I see your sores are healing.
This is what happened last week. It's just now healing up that I hit my knee, and I got stabbed through my knee.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's healing up, and that was from the last move that they did. Mm-hmm. And I can't get infected. I can't get sick.
Yeah.
Because my immune system shot.
Yeah, because of the chemotherapy, right?
Because they keep bringing people around and all that, and I'm susceptible to getting sick by my immune system. And they don't care. They don't care. They better have me die off. I've had like 8 counselors from this place, and these people are useless.
Thank you, Bill. I'm going to come back and check on you because, I wanted to bring you up something too. It's like, if you have time or anything, because I'm trying to do a talent show. So the summer is either June or July, and I would like to invite you guys to have maybe a viewing party or something so you guys can get a respite of all of this misery. So I will follow up with you.
I can't go nowhere. The violence here, even for us, we have to protect ourselves, and the cops don't help us.
Yeah.
And the women get raped, and I mean, it's really bad, mm-hmm. and the cops don't care.
Yeah.
They want us to all kill each other off and die off, and so we won't be a pain in their side.
Yeah.
Right there across the street, gentlemen.
Sanitation has a legal right. They're paid cops to let them steal whatever they want to steal. It's wrong.
Right there across the street.
I know it's illegal.
That's a memorial to all the people that's died here and that we've known. There's like 10, 15 names over there.
We'll take a look at the memorial because we'll put it on our episode. We have a memorial section on our program about unhoused people.
When they kicked us off the hill, there was a girl that we knew. She had nowhere to go, and so people moved to the side of the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
she got hit by
a motorcycle there and killed her. And that was the last one that passed away.
What was her name?
Her name is, it starts with a K. Kira. Not Kira.
What is her name?
Lindsay. Oh, that's it. Lindsay. Yeah.
Okay.
She was a nice, beautiful girl. I mean, that's not the only girl that's died.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so bad out here for these women. And they take all their belongings. And women need their female things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they throw them all away. And
I'm so sorry, Bill.
Can't even for us men, that we can handle a lot. But to do it to these women, I mean, straight out, these women are
homeless, more or less. Like, and they every single week, you know?
Last time when they came, when they did this last time, not one agency came here and asked me for any help after. The guy that worked from Harbor Interfaith, he came and took a jacket out of his car because they threw all my clothes away and all my jackets and all my stuff. I was freezing my ass off, and this guy gave me a jacket. You know, and, you know, they didn't care. You know, all my food, everything just got demolished. That's why they arrested me, to get me away from here so I wouldn't fight with them no more. But they're going to be coming here soon. I ain't going to fight with them because they put me on probation and everything.
Oh, my God. I'm like cancer, too. That's crazy.
They put me on charges that was bullshit because I have my mouth. I speak my mind, and they don't like it. And they come after me every time.
Thank you very much, Bill. I'm going to interview my friend here. Excuse me, Mark. You were mentioning a little bit, so I wanted to give your time as well. So how long have you been out here on the street?
About 5 years since my wife died.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you and your wife out here on the street?
No. I had my house here in Wilmington.
So how did you lose your house?
My wife died and I couldn't pay the bills no more.
No. So you've been saying that it's tough to be unhoused out here, but they keep harassing you. How often do you guys get any type of peace?
No.
And you were mentioning that a lot of unhoused people
never really come here at all, only when this happens. And they come in 10 cop cars for 2 trash trucks. Ridiculous. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of time. And they don't care. They just want this all gone and the trouble to go away. The homeless isn't going to go away. It's going to get worse. So what in the hell are they doing? They're not helping us. Trust that.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. But
they
make over $3 billion, and then they keep saying they don't have enough money. I just I don't understand it.
$100,000.
Not even drinking water.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
We don't get showers. We don't get nothing here.
The showers come out when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
They're not for us. Yeah. For them to take showers.
Oh, my God.
And they say, well, we bring showers. It's not for us.
Yeah.
And they only come when they do this.
Yeah.
So they're city workers, you know? It's a joke if they say they're bringing out showers for the people.
But if you take the shower and then you come back, all your stuff is gone, what good is that?
It doesn't, you're damned if you're doing, you're damned if you're doing here.
Yeah.
And,
I'm really sorry to hear that, but also, this memorial, who got idea when you guys had thought to?
Who got housed and at least during the COVID, hotels, blah, 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 and that. I'm almost 60. I'm in the prime tenancy of it all. I was never offered, not once, by anybody. So that's why I say, everybody,
And not only that, too, they're about to throw them back out of from the hotels because the city's open.
Yes.
So they're going to be out here again.
Yes, exactly.
Be right back down here.
Yeah. So that's not helping.
They're wasting money.
Mm-hmm.
It's all they're doing.
I don't know why
he doesn't say, I have COVID, I'm under quarantine,
mm-hmm.
take my stuff,
mm-hmm.
and sue the hell out of him. I don't know why he doesn't, really.
No.
I can't lie, so, yeah.
Well, yeah. He's got cancer, too, so, they don't get
in the sun, but they take everything to keep him in the sun.
They're going to take my honey, they're just plastic.
Yeah, he took all his stuff.
But here's the thing, too.
They're going to take all of this, so he has nothing,
but
even though his stuff's out. What about his health right there?
But see, that's the issue too, when they're talking about they having your tents down at a certain time, because people don't understand that you're not the
right there.
Oh.
My tents that blew when they gave me.
Oh, okay.
I had 2 brand new tents, a blackout tent.
And they took them in the box, took them,
mm-hmm.
and left them that.
Mm-hmm. And they gave me that.
And these were 6-8-man tents
mm.
in the package, brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And they took those, threw them away, and gave them that.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
And that's what they gave me. That's helping?
That looked like a dog tent. Well, we could do better than that for you. We could do better than that.
They frustrates the hell out of me.
Yeah, I understand.
They keep us like this for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's job security.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all these look
Lopez.
At their trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Look at
he's the worst of all.
Officer Lopez,
Officer
yeah.
Lopez.
Yeah. Oh, he's the main one. He's going to come down here and talk to me once.
Yeah.
He's trying to take me out twice.
They have brand new trucks, brand new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They get paid top dollar.
For what? No, of course.
For what?
Mm-hmm.
It's their business.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where all that funding of that money, it's called policing of America.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a good one here in LA for this one.
And all the trillions of dollars government's given.
For this.
Whoever, yeah. For the homeless, where's all the money going? It's because not helping us. They're taking everything we own.
They don't understand the COVID. It brought up the taxes on everything you buy here.
Mm-hmm.
And now our money has... I get disability. I get the stimulus checks, but it still ain't. It's not making up.
Exactly.
Difference for it. I mean, it's so high for taxes here.
I don't even get the stimulus check.
If you don't have at least $20, depending on what you buy, every time you go to a store, you can't get nothing. You have to have at least $30 every time you go to a store. And if you have a habit, hell, you're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, these people don't have drug problems, they got mental problems for what they're being abused to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it was their parents or whatever, and mental health comes out here and says, hey, would you like our help? A day later, after they threw all your shit away, last time they never even showed up. Harbor Interfaith hasn't came by, no agency has come by here yet to talk to me yet. And they all know I have cancer, they all know I got my medical stuff, and they have access to everything. I give them permission for all my access so I can get into a place so I can get the shit off me.
Okay.
They won't even do that. And they just lied to me a year. I signed all those papers, sir. 30 signatures on everything. Say, make sure, hurry up, do that. I did it all. And then, like 6 months later, they said, oh, we're so sorry. You were the last one in line and you missed out. But when we get housing, we'll give you your first in line and the new one. And that was over a year and a half ago. There ain't no housing. There ain't no housing for us. They want us to die, and that's what they're doing. They're putting me in the dirt, and they keep grinding me into the dirt. I'm gonna end up dead here. It's either I have to commit suicide or they're gonna kill me. I don't wanna die like this.
I understand. This is Theo Henderson from We and House. Thank you, Bill, for your time. And again, I hope we have met in the light of understanding, and hopefully we can do something about this injustice. Good evening, this is Theo Henderson from Weedian House. Today we are here at Wednesday at another Black Lives Matter rally that has just ended successfully, and we have a special treat for you. We have a house mother with 5 children that is struggling to get any housing, and we're going to get her story and see what we can do to help her get out of the situation. So let's get her introduced and introduce her lovely family. Hello.
Hi, my name is Marissa. This is Anol, Elijah, Erica, and Angelica.
How old are you?
Elijah?
You're shy now, huh?
How old are you?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
You don't know. So here we have, as you can see, the kids being kids. We're going to ask a little bit about your story. How long have you been unhoused, Marissa?
It's been like more than a year and a half. Yes.
What caused you to become unhoused? You were telling me a little bit about it.
I got into a severe car accident. I was in New Mexico, and I got hit. I got hit and I got dragged 5 miles. And also, too, my son was in the accident. I was 2 months pregnant. So that caused me to lose where I was living. And then after that, I decided to try to come back to where I was from, which was here, and try to start all over again, you know.
So you were originally from Los Angeles, yes. Right. So what made you leave Los Angeles to go to New Mexico?
Well, because I had met their father, so I went to Mexico. So it was a whole big old long story and a trip. And I ended up having my 2 girls there and coming back here. And then I ended up going to New Mexico because I have family in New Mexico. And so I just figured that I would, you know, be good with my family. You know, they would be able to help me. And it was, you know,
pretty tough. Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. To being dragged 5 miles in a car with also carrying a child. You were mentioning about the young, Elijah's father. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
All of their
father.
He passed away, yes. Right. And he was in Mexico. and he got hit by a truck, a drunk driver, coming on the freeway, and he was coming off from work. Yes, so, but this happened way before anything had happened to me. This is what his sister says, but, you know, I didn't see nothing. I just didn't hear from him, you know.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So you were mentioning earlier, as one of the things is being unhoused, we are very conscious about, you know, how we are presented, because many of the NIMBYs, for example, in Echo Park, have been vilifying unhoused people just for surviving. And you were mentioning a very good point, like with another family that I interviewed, because people make horrible aspersions against unhoused families or parents. Can you tell us what are some of the struggles that you were mentioning? Because we were going to do the interview earlier, but you had some concerns. And let's talk about them. Because the other mother mentioned it as well.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much, you know, the internet for the children, you know, the cooking, the food, you know, the clothing and how you wash your clothes. Like, for me, that's pretty much it. But I'm grateful for the people that I have in my life and that I know, you know, because if it wasn't for them, you know, the government, I asked them to help me several times, and they didn't go and help me. You know, they said that I wasn't qualified and whatnot. And so that set me back a lot. And I keep on filling out, you know, and telling them that I'm homeless and that I have nothing, you know. And I don't see how they don't get it through their head that I have nothing, you know. I haven't even got any money from my accident. And then I had another accident where my sister lived. Over there in Georgia, a man was coming, and he was a worker, and you know how they have those pulley carts?
Right.
He had some AirPods in. Right. He couldn't hear me. He hit the back of my legs, made me flip backwards, and I just had been injured previous to that, you know?
Oh my God.
So I have, you know, that lawsuit running against them, and, you know, I haven't seen nothing from either side, and I don't feel that that's any fair, because I'm struggling, you know, and, you know, like I said, the only people that help me is my friends and whatnot. They lift me up, you know, and that's pretty much it.
I understand that you have a limited time at the hotel, and people are really trying. I know they're feeling really trying hard for,
5 days.
Yes. So, and before, of course, full disclosure that I'm working to try to get her housing by Friday, hopefully. What was your plan after the 5 days?
Well, I was just hoping and praying, you know, to God that, you know, doors would open, you know, and that somebody would come in and, you know, say, hey, we know of a place that takes the PATH program, you know what I'm saying? We'll open our doors to you, you know.
Tell us a little bit about the PATH program. What was going on with that?
Well, the PATH program, they say that they're supposed to be there to help the families. But in actuality, when my daughter was born and they knew I had nothing, they didn't come to offer me a piece of clothes for her, food for her, nothing. You know what I'm saying? And so then, you know, for me, that was very hard because once again, at that point, I didn't even know anybody. You know, and the social workers at the hospital had to go and give me everything, which was really a hurting pain for me because my worker was getting everybody else diapers and all that. And I've seen this with my own eyes because I knew the women, you know what I'm saying? And I seen them bringing them things. And I was thinking, well, they know that I'm about to have this baby any day. Why are they not helping me? They were supposed to be helping with so many things they promised me, and they let me down in so many ways. And I had four workers, you know, and I told my second to last worker that I had, I told her exactly how I felt about them, their program, and how they were running the place. That it wasn't fair, you know what I'm saying, to people like us that need their help for reals, you know. So, but...
I'm so sorry that you've gone through this. I don't have five children, but I do. When I was stabbed 5 years ago, and I had to have severe surgery, I do know how, you know, the lack of social services that is out there, and it's very frustrating that people that make these horrible aspersions, or they're so worried about the ducks at Echo Park and all of this nonsensical, but doesn't give one damn about people that are suffering and having these kind of realistic issues. What other things, like, before you had these accidents, what were you before? Because I know you just didn't just become unhoused, because obviously you had a life way before this.
Well, yeah, I've been in a salesperson, I've been security, I've been, you know, a flower decorator, you know, I've done everything that I could, you know what I'm saying, to support my family. And when I needed the support from the government, they gave me nothing, you know what I'm saying? And I really just, you know, inside I really feel, you know.
I'm sorry to hear you going through this, and I really hope, it was my hope to help as many as unhoused people that I can, like, to get with your story and try to reach out, because we have, like Black Lives Matter says it best. We keep each other safe, and we have to look out for each other. We have to, this is more than just about displacement here in California. This is displacement even in Palestine. We have to give a care. We have to understand that we are all a part of mankind, and nobody deserves to be displaced and unhoused. I don't care what the challenges that they have. They deserve a home and be safe and loved. Is there anything else which you want the rest of the world know?
Well, I just thank, you know, before anybody says anything or does anything, I thank him for everything. You know what I'm saying? I thank you. I thank everybody that's here and that, you know what I'm saying, that's helped me along the way. You know what I'm saying? Because I couldn't even walk. I couldn't even use the bathroom myself, you know? And all the people that helped me, I'm really, really grateful for them, and mainly the Lord, you know? Because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here.
I think you have a lot to live for, and your kids obviously very deeply love you, as well as, you know, there's bright days ahead. Like I say, you know, life is gonna be a challenge, but I have much confidence that we're gonna do our best to help you.
Yes, thank you so much.
This is Theo Henderson from We Didn't House, and I thank you all for listening, and I hope we truly meet in the light of understanding and help make this world a better place and reach our hand of compassion and empathy for our fellow human beings.
Theo Henderson from We Didn't House. I'm here in San Francisco at the hospitality, and I'm introducing some of the members of the San Francisco Coalition, Homeless Coalition. So we're going to go around and introduce each other and then get some questions started. Let me start with, we're a little far, so get me. But
whatever you're most comfortable with.
Yeah.
My name is Tracy Mixon. I am a peer organizer here at the Coalition on Homelessness.
Hi, I'm Cooper Arona. I'm a street medic and a volunteer here at the Coalition.
Yes, I just want you, I understand we could social distance, but let's kind of speak a little loud so we can hear. The people can't hear you if you're social distancing.
My name is Emmett House. I'm vendor coordinator for Street Sheet.
And what is Street Sheet?
Street Sheet is a paper created by homeless and formerly homeless individuals.
And Olivia, I didn't mean last but not least.
And my name is Olivia Glowacki, and I'm the development director here at the Coalition.
Okay, so we'll start with on my right. Let's get a little bit of intake on how did you get started here in Coalition for the Homeless.
Once again, my name is Tracy, and how I got started here was I came here about 6 years ago through Ariba Juntos, just placed here. And a few years later, I ended up working here. And during the time that I started working here almost 3 years ago, I was homeless with my daughter during that time. So it was like it gave me a whole different insight onto being homeless and how homelessness works, especially working here. So this has been my education.
What was so different, because many people didn't magically just sit down and say, hey, I'm going to be unhoused or homeless or displaced. There has to be a lightning rod of event. So what made you see that there was a difference when you became unhoused? What happened?
for me, how I became unhoused, I lost my mother 6 years ago. So I tried to keep it together for me and my daughter and tried to keep our housing stable. But because of my trauma from losing my mother and trying to make sure my daughter was going to school and everything, because she was getting ready to start kindergarten when all of this happened. Okay. So it was like with all that trauma and everything, I tried very, very hard. But I needed to seek some other outlets, and then I ended up homeless and I had to crawl before I walked. But now I'm housed. But it was, like I said, I learned how to advocate for myself.
That's one of the things I was going to ask. Like, what was the, because I too am unhoused and I've been for 7 years and I had medical issues. But the first thing that I remembered that out of everything of the times of being unhoused was the first night. My first night, I almost walked my legs off, which I had a cane now, but I walked because I couldn't compute that here I am having a place, having a job, you know, trying to, you know, get my swerve on with this young lady and trying to start a life. And here I am relegated, walking down and trying to figure out where I'm going to lay at, where I'm going to get some food. And I didn't sleep, obviously, at night. So I just wondered, what was the first night like? What was the trauma? Was it traumatic for you? Because it sure as hell was traumatic for me, but, you know.
My first night homeless, I'm just going to pull this off so y'all can hear me. My first night homeless, I was actually staying at my daughter's father's house, and that was a drug house. I'm going to keep it 100. That was a drug house, and that was no place safe for me to be. So I wish I would have walked the streets with my daughter all night, because I would have felt a whole lot safer. Mm-hmm. So that was my first night of homelessness, and I only stayed with him for 2 weeks until I said, you know what, I'm going to go to a shelter. I'd have rather slept on the floor on the mat than having to keep being woke up all night long.
Well, a drug house is definitely like a 7-Eleven. It's always open. So, so that definitely, you're not going to get any sleep there.
That was not our movement. And like I said, I ended up going to the family homeless shelter, which is totally not sleeping on the floor now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. But it's like having to sleep on the floor and everything. It was like with my health issues and everything that I have going on, it was like I ended up making sure that me and my daughter didn't have to stay there that long. And it took almost a year, but we're finally housed. And now I've been housed almost 2 years.
You mentioned that you had, I don't want to sound like Oprah Winfrey talking about aha moment, but you said you, because I'm not Oprah, but like, but you did say that you started to come into your own and start speaking up for yourself. What was the catalyst for that? What made you say, hell, I'm going to start speaking up for myself?
Being homeless and working here. Mm. And this is how I learned how to speak for myself. I know how to speak for myself, but how to speak for myself on this level in order to make sure that me and my daughter was housed, honestly, I learned it at the Coalition. I wouldn't have known how to do it in the correct way. And I learned how to maneuver everything. I learned how to maneuver, and that's why me and my daughter are housed. But it shouldn't take luck. It shouldn't take me learning. Everybody needs to know how to advocate for themselves, and there's not enough teaching the people how to advocate for themselves.
I agree. So what would be, you just basically said it, so what would be a idea for people that are looking to learn how to advocate? Where would they go besides here? If you knew any other locations?
I would pass that on. But also I would say for adults that are homeless, because I work with families.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that for adults that are homeless, you can come to the Coalition and talk to our human rights members.
Is it a difference between people that are with families than just the average single people?
Right about now, it is a whole complete difference, because I remember when all of my friends was having kids, all of them was able to get housed, and I was a single adult by myself, and I had to come out here in these streets and get my housing living in these SROs before they got took over by the nonprofits. So I didn't been down this route. Then once I had a child, then I ended up homeless. And it's sometimes the single adults got more action than I have as a parent.
Oh my!
So yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a lottery.
Things change in 30 years. Because my godson is 30 years old, and I got a 10-year-old daughter. My godson and my daughter are 20 years apart. But I done looked at how things have changed. So it shouldn't be about letting. All of us need to reach out to each other and find out how to do more. Because it's not just about me being a parent, having a child. It's about people that don't have children. You feel what I'm saying? To be able to be housed. And it shouldn't be about luck. And it's crazy because COVID is ensuring more people are being housed now. And it shouldn't have took a pandemic for that.
I agree. I'm going to move on.
And thank you. So I'm gonna dip out because I'm.
Yeah, that's why I was gonna let you go. All right, now we got the first part of the interview out the way. If it's okay, but I ask you a question and I'll pop to you. Then you're the last. So let's start with you. Let's introduce yourself and give us a little bit on your take how you got involved here.
My name is Emmett House. I am Street Sheet Coordinator.
What is Street Sheet? Because I keep hearing you say that.
So Street Sheet, for example, are these. So it's mostly Street Sheet is created. It's mostly created by homeless people or formerly homeless people who just going through, you know, life issues. And sometimes I have one of these issues. We have poetry. They write poetry about what it is or how they going through on the streets. Somebody.
Okay, what was your inspiration for that? Because, you know, I've created this Weedy Un House for to advocate for people that are on the street in Los Angeles, because we had agencies, but we didn't have enough of the positive kind of information, because we had, I don't know if anyone's heard about it in Los Angeles, we got this damn view called Streets of Shame. And this place, this reporter goes around into unhoused places and vilify them, making them sound like they're crazy, mentally ill.
That's what they used to do out of.
Yes, I mean, it's horrible. And the horrible thing about it, this dude got a Pulitzer Prize for doing this kind of stuff. So it really would just rankle my blood that he would go and get the most vulnerable people and just insult them, talk over them. So I said, you know, what is missing was a positive representation and a humane representation of unhoused people. Hence, this is how I got started with Weeding and House.
Yeah.
So what was your motivation to do this?
So I'll go back to when I first started being a part of the coalition. I was a single parent, and I ran the streets out here in San Francisco.
How long were you out here on the streets?
So all together, I've been homeless about 20 years.
Okay.
So how I ended up here at the coalition was I was trying to find something different. I was trying to find a job. They wouldn't give me a job because of my arrest record. So I felt like, you know, I heard of the coalition. So when I first came to the coalition, it wasn't here in this building. But it was a lot to take in.
Mm-hmm. What was your memorable moments of being out on the street?
I have to tell you that I've never, even though I've been homeless, mm-hmm. I've been to shelters, I've never slept on the street.
Oh, wow.
I've been, probably had to stay one night outside or something, and I was like you, I didn't want to go to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know where, who, what, where, and how.
Yep.
So yeah, I was like you.
Yep.
I wasn't here in San Francisco, but yeah,
mm-hmm.
I didn't go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up here, I ended up at the coalition. Like I said, it was a lot of stuff going on. It was a lot to take in, and then, so I was battling within myself. Should I be out on the streets and doing what I do on the streets, or should I change my life and try to work? I'll be getting basically get ready to work for free.
Mm-hmm.
Was I ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I told myself, yeah, you can do it. But then in the back of my head, it said, no, you can't do it. You're a single parent. So to make a long story short, I end up staying at the coalition. Even though I was in and out the doors, I end up staying at the coalition because the coalition helped me out a lot as far as I went to jail and they sent lawyers to keep me out.
To get you out, not stay. Okay, good. That's a good thing. I thought you said get you
so I
in there.
Like, I feel like I owed the coalition because they had no reason to, they didn't have to step in the way they did to get me out. So I still wasn't ready for the coalition. I went and worked other places. I ran a grocery store. I ran a clothing store. I ran a desk clerk business. And still, I ended up back here in the coalition. And how I ended up here back at the coalition, because I'm disabled. And I wanted to give back because I took a lot from a lot of people.
So one of the ways you're doing this is with Street Sheet. How long have you been Street Sheet and been out?
Street Sheet's been out for about
35.
Yeah.
Where could is it a way that we could be able, like, I know I'm from Los Angeles. Is there a way we could get Street Sheet out in Los Angeles to have it spread, or is there, what
so,
could you do?
So my Street Sheet is, my Street Sheets are all over California.
Oh, really? Okay.
So what happens is, yeah, sometimes I get people call me from other cities, other states, and they want us to send them papers.
Mm-hmm.
That part we can't do, not unless they want to pay for the shipping.
Okay.
But most of the time, people come here, they pick up any sheet that they want or however they want. Mainly, the reason why these were started, because it was a start of getting homeless vendors a way to get money.
Mm-hmm.
So the Street Sheet costs $2.
Mm-hmm.
So let me run it back. Now we know you got the COVID-19. So as if when this whole started,
mm-hmm.
it put a damping on all my vendors. A lot of people didn't want to talk to the vendors. Everybody think everybody got coolies and this, that, and the other. So it just took a lot of, it stopped a lot of, you know. So anything they make, I have cards, CDs, papers, anything they make,
mm-hmm.
it stays in their pocket. They don't, none of it come back to me. And what? That's the way I help give back.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I would say, have you thought about doing it digital, but you have a system.
We have a system. We have it on digital. We have it almost everywhere. I am the vendor coordinator, and I have an editor.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Quiver.
Huh.
And she does the most part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The most putting them together, putting the papers together. She does that, and then I just distribute it.
That sounds outstanding. Thank you. I'm going to turn to you. I introduce you, Cooper.
Cooper, yeah.
If you don't mind speaking up a little loud, because
everybody's coming with me.
Yeah.
my name's Cooper Arona.
So tell us a little bit about your story, because everyone's telling us a little about, how did you get ensconced here? How did you get attached here?
Well, I ended up, divorce led me to the streets of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a disabled firefighter.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
And my wife and I, after 10 years, we...
So didn't work it out.
Yeah, we separated. Mm-hmm. She's a civil litigation attorney.
Oh, God. Didn't want to.
One of the biggest law firms in the country. And
took everything she got, huh?
Yeah. So I ended up on the streets of San Francisco. I ended up at the 24-hour drop-in. They have a drop-in here, one, that, you know, 24 hours, you do laundry, shower. Well, I didn't know that it existed. I've been in San Francisco for a long time, and I didn't know that this 24-hour drop-in even existed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ran into a friend of mine just randomly my first night being on the street,
mm-hmm.
and she took me to a woman's place. And so it's not a shelter, it's a drop-in.
Right, right.
So you sit in a chair for 24 hours. That's pretty much what you have.
You can nod off there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And ended up that I saw a lot of things that I was not okay with, and I saw a lot of things that made me uncomfortable, and I became friends with the staff there, and I ended up volunteering there at for the graveyard shifts, and I saw a lot of medical issues that were being untreated, and you know, just a lot of women suffering, you know.
Right.
And
these are, a lot of trauma going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are women that are normally wouldn't make it in a tent or on the street.
Mm-hmm.
These are women that have a lot of, you know, social anxieties and or, you know, other issues and mm-hmm. physical disabilities and stuff, but they were the ones that were looked over.
Mm-hmm.
No one, the city didn't pay any attention to them.
Right.
Well, through me just raising my voice and being annoying, word of mouth gets around, and
right.
I end up meeting Kelly Cutler, who, you know, is here, and we end up in a few spots of protest type things, and on the news a few times, just her and I, you know, I ride up on my BMX bike, and I'm like, hey, you know, and just put my voice out there, mm-hmm. and then I was part of a No on Prop Q campaign ad that the coalition sponsored with the filmmaker Nicole Foley,
mm-hmm.
of the No on Prop Q. The city was trying to ban tents and, you know, one night a shelter bed, you know, or take it out of San Francisco. Well, that little piece right there, that little thing that I did, you know, that 2 minutes gave me so much information and helped me find my voice, what I truly needed to find.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it gave me this ability to just...
Confidence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I had the confidence. I didn't know what I was talking about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, so the coalition helped with that, but
a platform alone.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the things that ad did was the strength and ability that I had in me, I spread that to the folks, my other unhoused folks that I dealt with on the daily. If it was just friends or medical things that I help people with. But the thing is that I was able to tell them what the laws are, what they can and can't, what the cops can and can't do, and you know what I mean. And slowly, I became this advocate that I never wanted to be a spokesperson. I was an accidental spokesperson, I guess. And people came looking to me, middle of the night, come find me, Cooper. They're sweeping my, you know, what, you know, they're throwing my stuff away. So I'd ride over there and you know, talk to the cops, like, what's going on? You know, and they knew they're doing illegal activity, so they ended up leaving. You know what I mean? Because they knew what they were doing was wrong. So other unhoused people saw that, and like, you guys don't have to move. You don't have to do, you know, so that knowledge that I got really came through in just gigantic waves of not only like truth, but also it gave confidence in the folks that I dealt with and that were unhoused that thought they had to leave every time the cops came.
Yeah.
That they, you know, gave them, you know.
The same, and I was going to ask this question, I hate to interject, is like, because in Los Angeles, we have that similar kind of thing, and we're trying to galvanize the unhoused community there. Is sweeps common here? Is the people who are displacing unhoused people common here?
Oh, yeah, on the daily.
Oh.
I mean, and they're not even supposed to be doing even, I mean, as you know, the CDC is recommending not to move
right.
any, you know, unhoused
Same
people.
In Los Angeles.
Even our own, you know, are, you know, we're not supposed to be, I don't know if I can curse or not, but
we'll leave it out.
Okay, well, I don't, our city leaders are not really paying attention to what the f*** is going on, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're really, they're saying, oh, we don't do sweeps, they do. Every, I mean, just day before yesterday, I'm not only my homeless advocate, I'm a street medic, so I fix all the wounds of folks out here,
right.
But I'm out there, I mean, graveyard, all, I mean, whatever they need me, I'm out there, and I'm usually riding around, and I see what's going on. The city workers are bullying, grabbing, you know, they're basically shopping around for what they want, and they
mm-hmm.
come back and they take it, you know, and there's not supposed to be done any sweeps, and then they're displacing people that normally are in communities, you know, there's communities and unhoused, you know, encampments, I mean, that's crucial for survival out here, is to have a neighbor, to have people that know what's going on and know you. And when we do these sweeps, when the city does these sweeps, when London Breed is allowing these sweeps to happen, that it's displacing, and you got one guy here, you got five people, you know, whatever. And if something happens, someone needs Narcan,
yep.
guess what? That person is going to end up probably passing away because that neighborhood, that, you know, your
connections, you're a neighbor in the community. And if you have an issue, that you have someone there to help you.
Yeah, and that's what these encampments, and we're family, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And regardless mm-hmm. of, it doesn't matter where you come from, whatever, but like, if someone needs help, guess what? You have someone to yell, someone to say, hey, I need Narcan, or hey, you know what, I need someone call 911. When they displace and they move people around, so truly and without any heart behind it, that brings nothing but death and destruction, and our city's destroying people from the inside out, basically.
One of the things that you hit at a point that happened in Los Angeles, there is a community in Koreatown, and the gentleman's name was Joe, and he had heart medication, and he had heart issues. And they swept him and took all his heart medication and things away. Within the week, he died because he couldn't, because it's very difficult to get to the hospital. It's very difficult to get the medication. And you got to understand, during COVID-19 and pre-COVID-19, that's almost an impossibility. So this is I guess you could say, the collateral damage that London Breed, Mayor Garcetti, and any other city leaders, that they refuse to see the reality about.
You know what, and that's one of the things is it like they I mean, I'm a very logical person. I have my my wits about me, but what the F, our city leaders and our mayors, what do you not see is happening in front of you? Doesn't matter who you are, whatever, you live in the city limits, guess what, we're all residents of that city, whatever it may be. So you got to treat each and every one of us like we belong here, and that's because that's why we're here. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry about that, jump in, but I'm unhoused and was in Chinatown. I lived there. I was evicted there. So it was not like I just magically just said, hey, you know what? I like paying rent, but you know what? It looked like I got a nice spot out in the park in the freezing, because California get cold, raining, then you got to deal with the NIMBYs. They're running around throwing feces at you or setting your camps on. Like in Venice, they're setting those camps on fire while people are in it. They had to have the police in there, put them in protection program. So these are realities. That's why I do this podcast, is like, what is causing, why does we have such a disdain for poor people and vulnerable people? Why do we want to punch down? So, it seems like a universal place everywhere I go, Oceanside, Oakland, it's just like a predilection. We just don't like poor people.
And, I think the thing is that a lot of housies, as we call them, they're not understanding. They've never been in that situation. One, I think it's a lot of fear that they don't know what they think everyone is a drug addict, everyone's an alcoholic, everyone's a whatever. We're not. Mm-hmm. And if you just sat and you talked to your neighbor, your unhoused, whoever, hey, what's your name, or whatever, because I guarantee you most 95% of us, are going to be sweeping your street and, mm-hmm. and making sure no one's breaking in your car, so those are the things that they're not thinking about, and they think about that we're all human and we should be treated like that. And so let's let our mayors spend one night, come spend 24 hours with me out there, let me show you what it's like. Mm-hmm. come do this with me. Mm-hmm. Let him 24 hours with no cameras or nothing, let me show you what your officers sound like, what they do. Mm-hmm. let's walk the street. Let me show you what's up. But they won't do that, because that's reality. Mm-hmm. And that would fix, they would know what to do, because I think they like not knowing, and they're putting that fear into the rest of the public and saying, like, hey, you know what? The homeless people, it's not something, we're not something to be feared. Mm-hmm. We're people. We're just like you. We're just maybe having a small hiccup in our life. Mm-hmm. It's just one little beat, that's happening. And education and taking away that fear is what our cities need to do, and show the humanness, and that we all have a heartbeat. You know what I mean? We're no different than anyone else.
I agree, because one of the things that I see on Pepsi, when they use these people in disguises in basketball or these race cars, why don't they use the mayors to put in disguise and let them live out in the street and see how the police treat them, not knowing that they're the city leaders? And I guarantee you that there would be a different reality that they would not expect than when they come back in their full, out of the costume. I guarantee you they'll have a different reason, opinion.
And I have one good story on that. One of our city leaders, Jean Kim, mm-hmm. okay, she ran for mayor here. She's was one of our district supervisors. She contacted the coalition, and she, with Kelly Cutler, they contacted me, and we went on a little walkabout. Mm-hmm. I took Jane Kim in the mix, like all mm-hmm. to see the tents, mm-hmm. to see the how many females were out here. Mm-hmm. We walked, and you know what? I tell you what, it changed her whole dynamics on things. She did just that day, mm-hmm. like she with it was like an aha moment. Mm-hmm. And it was the most amazing thing to see that transpire in front of me, because I know what kind of, I know what she was like. She was not like bad or anything, but mm-hmm. she was way, I mean, she saw things differently. And, you know,
outstanding.
And like, I love her for that. She's an amazing, amazing person for her. Just, she made so many different changes, and I wish that I could get some more of the supervisors, you know, to do something like, or even I put it out there for London Breed, mm-hmm. come walk with Cooper. Let me show you what it's like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I say, and I say this all the time, you got to touch mm-hmm. it, taste it, feel it, to know what the F to do about it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? You got to be the beat of the street. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. the beat of the street. You got to know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't, then you don't know what to do about it, you know? And if you want change, stop looking in the same place, because all they're doing is doing the same thing over and over again. It's not helping anyone, and people are suffering. You know what I mean? One of the things that, one of the other projects I've dealt with, that I'm doing and have dealt with the city a lot is the Coalition and Stolen Belongings, stolenbelonging.org, right? We went around and we interviewed the stories of people that lost the things, the DBW, the sweeps, all that stuff, and it brings a human side and mm-hmm. real stories, real people.
Perfect.
Of what is happening, what our city's doing. Mm-hmm. And London Breed had the nerve to still say, my officers don't do sweeps. Like, wait, what? I mean, we got video of it, like, your officers don't, you know what I mean? And the things that they're doing and the underhanded ways that they're doing things, we documented all that stuff, and it's all right there, you know what I mean? And it's just, but it shows that we're real people, and those stories are really amazing, but also sad, and also they shouldn't be happening. You know, they shouldn't be ripping people's things away from their fingertips and throwing it in the trash. You know what I mean? Like, we're trash, we're not. And our city leaders and folks need to, and especially the people that don't know what it's like to be unhoused, stop for a second, 30 seconds, and take a look around you. You know what I mean? And maybe talk to somebody. Maybe come down to the Coalition, or even find me on the street. Find Cooper. I don't have a problem walking anyone around, showing, educating, you know, the public, and being part. Let them be a part of the community, because that's what we need. We need neighbors. We need community. We need, you know, each other, because that's how we're going to exist and make it through this stuff. You know, whole, and we need each other, and that's the most important thing, I think, you know.
Concludes the episode of We in House, the episode where we go into San Francisco. We investigated and we've learned a few things. I thank you all for listening to these stories with compassion and understanding. And for those that are complaining about the length of this video, I suggest that Game of Thrones or any other video that you can take the time to look at without complaint and re-examine, maybe it's you, not the length of the video that needs to be questioned. If you want Mary Poppins journalism, you know, there's other outlets to be looked at. But if you want to learn about people's experience of being unhoused, it doesn't take 5 minute little soundbite, and then we go into a commercial break to make one feel good. This is a serious issue, and we need people to listen and not hear. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.